I suffer the penalty of being the last to speak and having listened to everybody else. I've had all my points checked off one by one by one, so I find that I have nothing much to say. Except I think that it's immensely gratifying to see everybody gathered here today. When I began in 1993, Moscow was a very different place. The whole of Russia and the old Soviet Union was a very different place. In the years that I've been traveling back and forth, I've watched the transitions in many different parts of the old Soviet Empire. I'm shocked to say that it's not for the best. Baku, which nobody's mentioned hardly today, I understand from a friend there that there have been 500 high-rise blocks built in the last 2.5 years. They're being built rapidly at breakneck speed with watered-down concrete, which means that the aggregate will settle in the course of drying, which means that the buildings are intensely vulnerable to earthquakes. Baku is on an earthquake zone. In St. Petersburg, the biggest of the Fabrika Kutnia in Vasilievsky Island has been gradually disintegrating and falling apart. I'd looked at it on Google Earth the other day. I see it's now got a skylight over the center court and a new roof, which means that something has happened to it. I haven't been able to find out from anybody exactly what the status is with that building, but I suspect that it has been renovated and probably ravaged in the process. The whole difficulty of the restoration of these buildings seems to me to be immense because the fragility of the way that the ornament, if you could call it that, is organized, and the things like the glazing bars of the fenestration, the depth of the double glazing, the qualities of the materials, the finishes. I mean, we saw Gazprom. They put new windows in. I was fortunate that I got there in time before they either painted it, which I think is a huge mistake because you've got to paint it again and again and again from now forever, and it changes the way the surfaces look beyond recognition. And if you strip out all of those windows in which the quality of the fenestration was designed specifically in different areas of the building with small panes to give an even greater sense of the massiveness of the structure, that's swept away too. So, as everybody has said, it is necessary to deal with all of these issues with the most detailed and highly attentive attitude to the way those details are reassembled, because unfortunately, you've seen the Narconfin pictures, the condition of that building is now so bad that it is not possible to take the original windows and refinish them and put them back together again. It's going to have to be remade. To move on a little bit, I have a few acknowledgements to people that I should have dealt with at the beginning. The CCA, the Canadian Centre for Architecture, helped me to get the project rolling. I started it off in 93, just on an initiative which arose through the fortunate appearance in the market and photography of a little postcard of Tatlin with his assistants building the model for the tower to the Third International, which was, when I saw it, I never thought I would ever see a print from the period of that image, and the picture duly entered the collection of the CCA, and with it came an invitation to go to visit Moscow. So I went with Howard Schickler, who could not be here today, unfortunately, on my first visit at his invitation, and he set me up with invitations to visit his friends. I went and met Zhenya Ass, Sasha Brodsky, and Yuri Vakumov in that very first trip. We all met naked in the banya, which is rather a surprising introduction. But from there, with this gradual accumulation of friends over there, I was able to begin to branch out. I eventually met Pavel Horoshilov at the Ministry of Culture, who turned out to be a great enthusiast for photography and did everything that he could imagine to help me to gain access to things like the interior of the Lenin Mausoleum, where I was allowed an hour to work after the place had closed for the day. And people ask me now, how did you get permission to do that? Nobody ever gets in there with a camera. And it's true, they frisk you and search you down and make you put your cameras into the check room in the base of the museum down the street. He got me underneath the radio tower, which produced that picture that is the opening picture in the exhibition and seems to me to be the ultimate symbol of hope and regeneration and transparency, which was what the early years of the revolution was about. At the other end is the mausoleum, which is like the heart of darkness and the sense of the whole place closing in on us, and the end of the era of experimentation and the beginning of the dark ages of the Stalinist period. Here in America, John Schakowsky wrote letters on my behalf to the Graham Foundation. John Schakowsky was the long and distinguished curator of photography here in the museum. And so the Museum of Modern Art has been involved with the collection and the archive and the establishment of the work that I've been doing for a long time. Natalia Dushkina invited me to put the exhibition into the Shusev Museum. David Sarkisian supported that venture. Jean-Louis Cohen first told me that there was to be the conference there and raised the funding from the Lafarge Corporation to put that exhibition together. Barry Bergdahl here has been a terrific support in establishing the exhibition and getting it on in no time at all. I mean, basically, we were working on this 6 months ago. It seems often to be the way I seem to get to do things. The one in Moscow was 6 weeks. So that's about it. But the things that I think we have to pay attention to, John was talking about the idea of everybody here reaching out, because here we're all preaching to the converted. Everybody here is here because they want to hear about the preservation and know something about it and are active in it already. The people that we have to reach are the people in the government in Moscow, the people who are taking the steps that are causing a tidal wave of destruction throughout the city. I was fortunate enough to be just a little bit ahead of the wave when I was getting to some of these places. Some of them have gone already. The diving board in Kiev has been destroyed. The bakery has been stripped. Some of the other places have been altered beyond recognition and irretrievably destroyed, effectively. I mean, they're still standing there, but there's nothing that can bring them back from the condition which they have been put in. Pravda, even when I saw the inside of it, was already nothing much more than a shell. It had been stripped and partitioned with cheap, shoddy materials and plastic doors and brassy doorknobs. I mean, it was already a disaster. The only things that you could see occasionally were the linear windows that lit the corridors and a few remaining details that had sometimes been chopped in half by the addition of unnecessary and inappropriate partitions. Central Soyuz, the same thing, though these are probably reversible because they're pretty flimsily constructed with stud walls and it can be taken down again. And that building is so formally strong that it has an integrity and simplicity that can survive almost any kind of intervention. The things that I've been doing, the travels that I've been on, the people who I've met, and the kindness with which I was received in all the years that I was working on it, and certain things stand out. The man who let me into his apartment in the Narkomfin building, he was so, I mean, I was passing by, waiting, hoping that somebody would come home and be willing to let me into the building so that I could at least get up to the roof, perhaps. And not only did he make sure that I was able to do that, but he invited me into his apartment and let me wander and look around and scrutinize the way he had lived in that space for so many years. And that picture, which is the one with the blue wall, has become a kind of iconic image for me in this. It assembles the kind of whole history of the intervening years from between the time when the building was built, and he'd lived there all his life. He was probably born in that very in the bedroom upstairs. And one finds these kind of accretions of objects hanging on the walls, and the little porcelain figurine of the young Pushkin reading, and all these things that are pictures, images that you encounter all over the country. You'll find the same little clay figurine of the dancing girl on the shelf. And so it adds a level of depth and warmth and richness and humanity to the pictures, which is what I was really interested in capturing, because I've always found that in all the buildings that I went to, this kind of sense of light pouring into the modernist spaces was what they were driving at. And it was about a complete refutation of the end of the Tsarist regime with its recidivist, backward-looking medievalism being the espoused style of the Tsarist regime. So the fact that there were no materials, that everything was hard to come by, almost was the perfect fit for the idea of the modernist revolution. So that stripped, minimalist vocabulary of the modernists became the perfect expression of the early years of the revolution and the hope that it stood for. I think also, I may be wrong, but it's an opinion, that the architects quickly realized that they were leaning into a wind that was blowing very cold in the opposite direction, and it was to sweep all the whole idea of the modernist spirit away very quickly. In the transitional period, some people have mentioned those buildings, there seems to be a kind of cynicism, things that they were already on the drawing boards were there, and somehow the spirit goes out of it. You see they're putting little brackets underneath the overhangs and little rows of finials along the top, which were obviously sops to the senses so that the building would get passed and could continue to be built. But it's the hope is gone. And very quickly, the idea of what the modernists stood for, even though they were trying so hard to reinvent a new architecture for a new age, they were doomed to failure and fell into a state of obscurity. The buildings were surrounded by poplar trees, which are now dying and being cut down because poplar trees lived about 70 years. And so they're beginning to reemerge from behind the situation of malign neglect with which they've been surviving through all the dark years of the period up until the collapse of the Soviet Union. Now they're facing the threat of the real estate binge that's going on in Moscow and tearing down such a huge part of the texture of the city, which is being lost. And the modernist buildings are only one part of that destruction and the perilous situation in which the city now finds itself. But it's not just Moscow. It is beginning to be St. Petersburg. Foster's assault on the city is unforgivable. Baku, I've mentioned already. Ivanovo, the Vesnin buildings there, one of the very first exercises in modular housing schemes. There's not much of it left now. What is left is in very poor condition, and it needs to be looked at quickly. I would put that pretty high on the list because of its experimental quality. In some ways, it has parallels with the idea of the Narkomfin, where you slot the buildings. They're not constructed in that way at all. I mean, but the idea of assembling prefabricated units and then putting them up in what was, at the time, a very large area is really an important part of the legacy. So I think really that people have covered the ground. Oh, let me speak just one more word of gratitude to the Russian Avant-Garde Foundation, which has supported the exhibition here. And I think that it's very important that the work that they're doing, and I wish them all success in their ventures. So, have I got everything else in here? I think so. Yes. So, thank you again. And I'm immensely grateful for everybody to be here.